Alrighty, thanks, Don. Thanks, everybody, for coming to the Gentle Healing class year three. So I'm grateful to be able to take over for Regina. It's very honored that she would ask me. Regina's on vacation this week. Her daughter, Jasmine, this last day of school is last Friday, so she's home for the summer. So they went on vacation together. So I'm very honored to be here. And I just wanted to thank everyone, too. What a great, amazing class this is to be able to share on the forum our wonderful insights and to be able to read each other's insights is so inspiring to me. And to be able to also notice the clarity, the increased clarity that we all have had since the very beginning. I mean, it's so obvious in our contemplations how beautiful our increased connection with the inner teacher is. It's just amazing. So I thank all of you for being here and for participating and for really doing the work, really going in and asking for guidance in our contemplations. So does anybody want to share? Let's all share tonight. We can join in together as friends and share what we've learned this week. That'd be awesome. And Don, could you help me look to see when hands are up? And we can just be informal. If you want to talk, just lift your hand and unmic yourself and chat.
I didn't want to go first, but I guess I'll go.
Thank you, Nancy. Appreciate you.
Good to see everybody, and I wish I had more time to read the contemplations on the website. I mean, just the few times that I've been able to do it, it's just been wonderful. I really love it a lot. And anyway, I work full time, and there's just, you know, not enough time in the week to do that. But anyway, here's my sharing. You know, I'm grateful for this group, and I know that if I were not in this group, I would not have the knowing that I have at this point. And I had a pretty interesting experience when we did lesson 97, and it was, quote, 295. Which was a simple sentence that reads, "The real does not die, the unreal never lived." And that's a quote from Nisargadatta. So when I read that quote, I had an insight, and it was like this intuitive flash, a download, whatever you want to call it. And that insight that came in really quickly, like right after I read that quote, was simply that the body isn't real and the self is. But it came in, it's sort of like, you know, check it out for yourself. So that's when I stopped to contemplate, like, you know, is the body real? And basically the experience I had was sensing how real the self is. And then noticing that even though I could sense that, feel that, that the self is real, I still believe that Nancy's real, the body's real. And so then I checked in with my body to see what that felt like. And it was just really clear to me that my belief that Nancy exists and that my body is real is only through my physical senses. Now, I've heard that, like faintly I recalled hearing that or reading that somewhere, but I could experience that, you know, it was touch, smell, hearing, sight, that it was only through my physical senses that I believe that my body is real. But it didn't feel at all real in the same sense as the self feels real. And so in my mind, I didn't write this in my contemplation, but I thought about this experience, you know, a few times after that. It was the difference between maybe wading in very, very deep water as being the self, and then maybe being in very shallow water or hardly being in any water at all when I checked in with my physical self, let's say. Like there's a lot of depth to the self, and you know, the physical body feels just very maybe one-dimensional or very flat. Another metaphor might be, you know, in a symphony orchestra, when occasionally when the orchestra builds to a crescendo and I don't know what you call this particular drum, but it's this very, very full sounding drum sound, you know, I mean, it can take up the whole room and you feel it in your body. It's just really voluminous and full. And checking in with my body felt more like, you know, the metaphor that feels right for this would be like dropping a coin into a tin can, you know, it's just really flat. So that experience was really more than eye-opening. It was just, you know, it was just like integrating more this knowing that this world isn't real. And the other thing that came up for me was like, why did that insight come now? And why did it come in that way? And it and I had that experience the day after Regina said that she was really going to be very direct about what she believes to be real and what isn't, and more direct than she has been. And it's because she went through a kind of shift, or she had an experience where she came to that conclusion. So I guess intuitively it feels like I'm resonating with her, and I'm sure the group is. And she even made a mention of that when she said that she had read, you know, the contemplations, and she had felt a shift in the group in general. So there can be a lot of reasons for how that information comes in. I mean, maybe we all gather in a dream state as well, or our minds are in tune or whatever. But, you know, I think it was more than a coincidence that I had that experience the day. It was, I think, on a Wednesday. It was the day after she had said that to the group. So I just wanted to bring that up. I've been dying to go on the website and see what people are writing and what people are saying, but I just haven't had a chance. So that's my share.
Thank you, Nancy. That was awesome. That sounded like a real shift, a total shift in your perception. So that's what we're aiming for, right? Beautiful. And I loved your metaphors too, the depth of the self. You gave a real good example of how they feel different through contrast. And that's a lot of the way we learn, right? That's beautiful, through contrast. And your self-inquiry, that was perfect. That's what we want to do. Is this the body? Is the body real? Just exactly what you did in self-inquiry. So thank you so much for going first. And if you get a chance, do look at the form once in a while. It's just amazing. I know it's hard when you work full time. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Jay, you're on.
Can you hear me? Okay. Well, this last week was the week that I spent in the retreat center. on a wonderful silence and satsang retreat with a small intimate group of myself and Sean and Cheryl and Regina. And I spent a lot of time contemplating these quotes from the seven steps during the week. Some of them were in really beautiful physical locations like North Lake and the sand dunes. So it was really conducive to that inner state and going within and being quiet. and a lot of it was really about a similar thing Nancy was talking about, which is really what phase two, step two, and the seven steps is about, is to let go of our attachment to the illusion of the body. You know, and this, you can intellectualize that, and some of the comments he makes are not really something you can even understand consciously. They're more of a description of his, if you want to call it, perspective or experience, Nisargadatta. You know, as we were listening to Eshwar on Sunday, what he was pointing to was that thoughtless state where there wasn't a me present in the experience, direct experience, unitive experience, however you want to call it. And focusing on that, you know, whatever we give attention to becomes real to us. If we focus on being a victim, then we're identifying with the body and we're going to feel like a victim. And that's what will be real to us. If we focus on God or light or silence or truth, then that's what becomes real to us. And, you know, when we ask, do the, as I practiced, you know, who is it that thinks this? Who is it that thinks he's upset? You know, et cetera. Of course, it just vanishes when I ask myself that because there's nothing there to be upset. There was a quote, number 300, the moment you allow your imagination to spin, it at once spins out a universe. It is not at all as you imagine, and I am not bound by your imaginings. And that's what Nisargadatta was sharing. And what stuck out for me in that was the you allow part, that key word there, you allow it. And we have to allow our imagination to spin. And if you stay unconscious, it will just spin. It'll go. It'll have free reign. Because the I, and this is one big realization I had recently, is when we say I, what you're actually talking about is your attention itself. That's the I, the attention itself. That comes from awareness and consciousness directly. That is the I. But it is completely pure. It's then colored with our thoughts and the self we've invented only through the memory of the mind and the body's brain memory and imagination. Because like I've shared before, I did have a memory of being born and the moment I was born through these rebirthing exercises that I did years ago. And it was a completely blank state, blank slate. Not even any thought for what the word light is, not any thought about myself, not any thought about anything. It was utterly blank with like eyes looking out to a blank slate. So I know that everything I think I am now is purely invented from my conditioning, from whatever, from my parents, society, billboards on the highway, whatever it is. So with as much distractions as we're surrounded with, television, a lot of people, I sometimes watch TV shows. Lately I've watched a few. But it's what you imagine and what you put your attention on. So if I let go of the attention off the body and focus it within and keep that inner awareness throughout my day, the body becomes less real in that sense. And the focus then is on the truth. And then I can connect with my brothers and sisters and see the behind the mask and see the light of Christ in their eye and not react. I did have a reaction today, so I was, which came up from a meeting I had earlier. And I had to do some inquiry and some root cause on that. And those stuck areas where purification still comes up, it's coming up a lot less often than it used to, but it still comes up. And as those straggling bits of purification come up, those are still ways I'm identified as the body, because there's a belief in there that goes back to the I am bad thought. That was one of the things I asked Regina. I said, so in your view, Regina, what is it that it indicates the completion of the, you know, purification? It's basically like the freedom from the guilt altogether, as the Course would talk about it, is the same thing basically as the I am bad thought. It's very equated to the same thing. And that's kind of how Regina teaches it. And it was nice to connect that as really being the same thing. Because that's what NTI teaches, is that when we had this tiny mad idea and created this idea of a self, we imagined that we were guilty for doing so. We weren't really guilty, and there was no real sin. We just imagined that we were guilty. So to say others have a problem and they screwed up is the way we can, as the NTI says, be gentle on ourselves, to not admit, let it be the other person's problem, and also then express the guilt itself and the judgment. Because without judgment, we don't have any choices to make, and there's also no doubt and no concern either. Only with judgment is there now a choice to make. And so that's really what lies at the core of all of it. And the whole idea of the choice in the first place, which is what creates the body and brought this all about. We needed a place to have this experience. Does anyone else want to talk? Because I wanted to share one thing that was motivating me lately about letting go of my attachment to the belief in the body as real. If you ever get into studying genetics and how complex and amazing they are, yet they're still made of atoms and molecules. And if you look at an atom and molecule, it's mostly empty space. So really the body is an assembled, very complex, people say God-given. That's one perspective. Another perspective is that the infinite intelligence of mind created the body, which is created by God inadvertently. But the whole idea that it's real is what we're addressing. And it's been helpful to me to realize that atoms are mostly empty space, because they're not really there. There's nothing there. It's just the appearance of something there. So that when we had the thought of wanting to create this experience other than what it was, this all had to happen. This dream, these building blocks of atoms and all of this had to be here to build a body, to have a brain with senses and a seeming experience of something else. But with it is going to come pain and pleasure, and suffering and death, because it's temporary. So if we identify with that, then that's what we will be dragged into thinking we're experiencing, because that's the whole teaching here, is that you're not actually experiencing it. You're just thinking you're experiencing it. And the only way you can get unengrossed from that mess is to remember the self. And the only way to do that is to let go of judgments, let go of your attachments, let go of all the things that we think we want in the world. It's not to say we won't still keep doing all the same things we're doing. It's just that we let go of our attachment to it. And it's really simple what's being taught here, but it's the mind makes it complex. So I'm just inspired to continue to practice and stay vigilant and keep going towards that spiritual aspiration. So that's my share.
Thank you, Jay. You mentioned that you asked Regina about when judgment was complete, when letting go of judgment was complete. Did you have something else, like how she answered that?
Well, she was equating the I am bad belief to the guilt that the Course in Miracles talks about as being the same thing, is when you've let go of the I am bad belief, you've let go of guilt, because it's the same thing. When I feel guilty, that means I've sinned. When I see another person as having done something wrong or messed up, that means I think they're guilty and that they've sinned. So that's what she's calling the I am bad belief is wrapped up in that sin thing. I'm bad because I sinned. Bad meaning guilty. Bad meaning a synonymous word for guilty. Does that help?
Yeah. I thought we were going to say what she mentioned to us was that she knew when the judgment was let go because you don't see judgment anywhere. So that was what I was going to add to that. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that. Appreciate it. Oh, Cheryl, hello. Please go ahead.
Well, I'm going to elaborate on what you were just sharing. I remember our conversation on Friday at the ice cream shop. It's not the ice cream shop, but we had ice cream. And I remember you asking that question, Shauna, about the I am bad. And you also asked her, when will you know that you've gone through that? You've healed through that. And remember, Regina took a pad of paper and a pen, and she was writing down actually our conversations. She said one line of what Jay shared, one line of what I shared, and one line that she shared. And she handed it to you. And then she gave you the example about balancing your checkbook. You remember that? That was the coolest part, because what I got from that was we balance our checkbook. We make a mistake, and if we go into the I am bad, then we have all these add-ons thoughts of, I'm never going to do it right, and, I'm a loser, and I'm never going to be able to balance my checkbook, and I'm never going to have enough money, blah, 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 and you can just go on with that. I mean, you can imagine all kinds of scenarios by balancing your checkbook, and what came to me is, don't do the add-ons. Just balance your checkbook and then get on with life. Even if you make a mistake, you're balancing a checkbook. And so you're just staying in that moment, and you're balancing a checkbook, you're having a conversation with someone, you're working, you're doing something you need to do, and it's all that imagination add-on stuff that is keeping us from the truth of who we are. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. That was great. No add-ons. Yes, Jay.
Yeah, I really enjoyed your realization, Cheryl, about no add-ons. Because as a programmer, I deal with add-ons all the time. But in a spiritual sense, I'm willing to commit to no add-ons. The only, just to throw out a sharing about the closest thing I've had to like a mystical experience that I could describe as really realizing that this is all an illusion, was this was back before I left to come to La Vida in Chicago. This was a morning right when I was waking up. I was in this place of utter light, incredible light. There seemed to be other beings that were just barely outlines of light or something, incredible bliss, this feeling of amazing love just for about a second and a half. And then, do you know, like when you pull the shade down, like a drape, the roller kind, you hang on both and you pull it down. I can't quite describe this in words, but a drape came down. Jay McCormick, age 52. He lives in Chicago. Like this whole litany of who I think I am. And then all that, I woke up as me again. And like, what was that? And I'm like, It made me realize, maybe there is this reality that who I really am living in, and this is a dream. When things like that happen, and that wasn't a dream I woke up from. I don't know what it was, but it kind of relates to step two here a little bit in the sense that I just think there's been a shade that's been pulled down. And it's not necessarily quite so easy to pull that shade up. I have a feeling like all these practices we're doing can help make me ready, but I have to just be in a surrendered state. I can't, through grace, like God has to take that last step. It's not something I can control. We were talking about that in the Buddhist class I was facilitating earlier today. Susan Fady and Susan Bacon and Jill and a guy named Sean, who's actually not in the class anymore, but or he's not going to be in the, you know, showing up to the class anymore because he's got other stuff. But we were talking about how it's really you know, being in that state and practicing and practicing all day and not just being in the meditative state and then going back to your real life as you see it. You know, it's taking that meditative state of waking up to the real life and bringing that then into your day. And that's when I think I'm in the best state to apply, like what Cheryl's talking about with no add-ons. It's not just if I made a mistake. It's also if you did something really well. You know, we push the pendulum that way too when we have successes or I receive compliments or praise. That's just the same kind of thing I have to be just as neutral with. Because an add-on like Cheryl's talking about is not just I screwed up with balancing the checkbook, but oh my God, I did such an awesome job balancing the checkbook. I'm such a good person. I'm awesome. Like really both can cause that. So I just wanted to throw that in.
Excellent, Jay. Thank you. Appreciate that. It's so true. They, we just add on all the time. If we're listening to our mind, if we're believing and listening to our mind, adding on all the time. But it is where the rubber hits the road is when we can get up off the meditation couch and go out into the world and apply it. That's where the rubber meets the road, applying it. That's where we really learn it. So thank you for that. Appreciate it. Anybody else want to share? George, yay, go for it. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Yeah, you know, several months ago, I really felt the prompt to not add on, but subtract. And I'll tell you what, it's much harder. it seems like instead of subtracting, I've gotten busier and busier and busier. And, you know, I mean, we're halfway through. My wife retired last Wednesday. She works in Chicago or did work in Chicago. And of course, we also have a home in Tennessee. And so I brought a truck up here and a trailer. And so we're halfway through. You know, we load tomorrow. It's amazing how much we have added on to our stuff. I mean, we have a lot more stuff that I think that I'm going to be able to haul back because I should have got a bigger truck or a trailer. So, but anyway, so it's a process. It's a process. And, I don't know when it ends that I actually will be able to start stepping back and stepping down. You know, it's been a struggle. Nancy talked about a lack of time. You know, I've been retired for 11 years, Nancy, but I'm just as busy as if I have a full-time job. Everything I do is a choice. I don't have to do anything other than what I've already obligated myself to do. And of course, I've got a partner that, you know, that's we're consolidating. I think most of you know, out of 15 years of marriage, we've only lived together about 5 of those. So, so we haven't actually lived together for about the last 5 years. And so, I mean, things are constantly changing. Let me share my screen if I can. Okay. And okay, let's try this. Ooh, there's something new here. All righty. Okay. I'm going to disappear, you guys. Okay, this works. So let me share a little bit. Today's quotes were 321 through 324, and I'm not going to read all the way through them, but, I went into inner wisdom, and this was what I got. Do you really know anything? Do you judge your current moment as lacking? Look at that thought with me, and I will show you what is real. All of these quotes are simply pointing you back to me. And there again, when I seem pressed for time, sometimes I can address each one of them as a quote, and sometimes I can't. And this is one of those periods that I can't. I love reading other people's quotes because I get insights from how they see these things too. And they, everybody expresses differently. So, all right, let's see here. I'll share 313 and then I'll stop. Once you have seen you are dreaming, you shall wake up. But you do not see because you want the dream to continue. A day will come when you long for the ending of the dream with all your heart and all your mind, and be willing to pay any price. The price will be dispassion and detachment, the loss of interest in the dream itself. And what that reminded me of is the bucket list. It's particularly popular as people get on the second half of their life and later. They have a bucket list of things that they would like to accomplish. So the bucket list, we can sometimes see the ego mind more clearly in others than ourselves. There are those who say, make a list of desires and we will more likely achieve them. And even if the list is not written down, it's still in our heads. Toward the end of his life, my dad, he died about 3 years ago, always seemed to have one more thing he wanted to do. And even right up to the end, he was still looking forward to the next thing, even if it was just to see the next day. I see that in myself too, a list of goals to be checked off. And yet there is another voice that is saying, give it up. I am drawn to listening to that voice, which is getting louder and louder. And I'll share with you, my dad was in and out of the hospital the last few months of his life. And, generally about a week, they'd get him stable. And he'd go home and he'd be off again. But the last time he had been in the hospital about a week, and the doctor came in and said, Mr. Maddox, this is it. You're not getting better. Your system is shutting down. And they put him into hospice care. And the very first day after they told him he was in hospice care. He woke up and he says, I'm still here. So he had a sense of humor about it, that's for sure. But yeah, my dad was, he was pushing it. He lived to be almost 90, and he really, like I say, he just wanted to see one more day, and he looked forward to all of it. So, all right, I'm going to stop sharing here, and I will drop the mic.
Thank you, George. Have a safe trip back. That is amazing how people just look for just the next day, just to live for the next day, and wonder what the meaning is they find in that, besides just the enthusiasm to live. It's amazing. You sound like he was a great model. Go ahead, Jay.
This was many years ago, back in the mid 90s, early 90s. I was teaching some classes at the time, and there was a student's house that I went over to, and his father was dying, and it was under home care, and I think he passed just a few days after I visited him. And you were speaking about that, George, and one of the things that struck me about this guy's father was how peaceful he was. And there was a moment when I was standing in the living room, and he was in the bed with a I don't think he had an IV, but there was, I think, a home care nurse there, and his son, who was the student in the class that I was teaching at the time, was there. And it was just a peaceful energy. And the son came into the room at a certain moment, and his father pointed out the window. He said, "The son just came out." And none of us noticed that but him, but the way he said that was like he was in such a state of presence that there was just no thought about it. And I could see that he was just in this what I call peaceful state, but now I realize he was without thought. He wasn't wanting anything. He wasn't even wanting life. It was just utter peace. And your sharing there, George, reminded me of that, and that certainly relates a lot to these step two, the body is a dream teaching. So I just thought I'd share that.
Beautiful, Jay. And I do appreciate everyone sharing. Is anybody else like to share right now? Something I'd like to ask is, how are your contemplations coming along as far as when you started and where they are now? How do you experience going deeper? Or give me some examples of how your contemplations are going. Anybody?
I think I can speak to that. Can you hear me, Sean? Okay. I don't know if my contemplations are, I'm finding it easier to write my contemplations, and one thing that's extremely important about contemplating for me is that, you know, sometimes the quotes seem like they're saying the same thing but differently. And so I feel like I'm saying the same thing but differently. But what's really happening is that it's just going in deeper and deeper and deeper. And I'm loving doing the contemplations. I really am. And I think that's my favorite. This is my favorite year from Gentle Healing Group. So that's what I have to say about it, that it seems repetitious, but it's not really. I gained something. It's more than insight, you know? I just get something more each time I contemplate what seems to be like the same basic idea. So.
Nice. Thank you, Nancy. Yeah, as part of that is the repetition is to get past our thinking mind, right? To go deeper into what is inner guidance for us right now. So that's what I love about this. And it's increasing my motivation too. Motivation to be silent, motivation to contemplate, and motivation to listen for inner guidance. That's one of the things I love about reading other people's posts in the forum is it's so grateful that they're listening to inner guidance because we all learn, we all lift up the one light, the one mind with our contemplations. Anybody else like to share? Oh, good, George, go for it. George, you're still muted.
Okay, yeah. When I tried to unmute myself, another screen came up, so I had to get that out of the way. And Regina has shared this before. She's not going to wake up by going and sitting in a cave and doing nothing. She has a very, very busy life. And one of the things that I've really noticed is how important it is to me, regardless of how busy I am, at least spend a minimal amount of time and stay caught up with our homework. And once in a while I'll skip a day, and it seems like it really bothers me. It's like, wow. And I feel like I'm rushed to get caught up, but I feel compelled to stay on track. And I think part of that is because I do have a busy life. And, as I said, everything I do is a choice. So I have to make the choice to spend the time with what's really important. And this Awakening Together program is very important to me. Thanks.
Thanks, George. We appreciate your participation for sure. So let anybody else want to speak up and share from all the wonderful contemplations from this week? Okay, well, if anybody else doesn't want to go, during the retreat that we had this week, the silent and satsang retreat that we had, Regina took us out into the nature, and we just spent it 3 or 4 hours just in contemplation in whatever way that felt most helpful for us. And being in nature is a big motivator for me. I can just let go of everything. I think all of us felt the connection through nature to our true self. It's all the same consciousness. It's all consciousness. And just the beautiful insights that we were able to share during our satsangs after each day. That was really, really fabulous for increasing my motivation, for going deeper into the inner teacher, and being willing to listen without my add-ons. Okay, nobody else wants to share? Let me see if I can. Do I have time to share my screen? And I'll go to some of our shares for this week. Hang on one sec. There's share. Got that. This is my first time doing this, so hang on one sec. Oops, I forgot to bring up the forum first. Anybody else want to talk? Go right ahead. Well, it's not coming up. So,
if you want, I can bring up the forum. I've got the forum here. I can share it.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
And then you can talk. Appreciate it. Just tell me where to go.
Okay. Go today to Tuesday the 21st. Sorry about that, you guys. I will learn.
Which person?
How about you for today?
Okay. Okay. I'm in the middle of posting mine. I don't have them up yet.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Well, let's see. How about 314? I do not need the world, nor am I in one. And you say, it seems that Nisargadatta is sharing from his direct experience and using words we can recognize and understand. But what he is talking about is fundamentally not able to be described or talked about, for it is the very existence and direct experiencing itself without labels and without mind. And that's what Eshwar talked about also in the satsang on Sunday, was how it can't be talked about. It. He did a good job of putting words to what his awakening, but it can't be talked about. It's right here. It's obvious. And that's what you said in your contemplation, Jay. So I appreciate that. So let's go back to today and do Susan Bacon, please. Let me know if anybody puts their hands up. Okay, thank you. Her guidance for 322. Let me see if we can get that. The materiality of the creation is like the castle in the air, an illusory projection of one's own mind, imaginary. And Susan contemplates, how do I choose to see? The ego only perceives gifts that is defined as gifts. When it determines there is no gift, it tends to dream one up to imagine, I gotta move this, imagine the way things should be. What if I saw instead whatever I am experiencing as a gift of this life, exactly the experience I'm meant to have? I evolve not in continuing to see life as a struggle, but in seeing all the lessons before me as teaching the ways of being. And I love the way she said that. What if I saw instead whatever I am experiencing as a gift of this life as exactly the experience I'm meant to have? I think that's beautiful. Okay, let's go to Jill also today, please. And I will practice this again so I know how to do it next time. Okay, so this was today. And the last quote, 324. Her contemplation, this is Jill's contemplation. The wrong notion that this world is real has become deep-rooted on account of persistent wrong thinking. Pursuing spiritual knowledge with the mind intellect is not the same as knowing wisdom. by trying to use words and structures to explain the real nature of self, you keep yourself on the wheel of false knowledge. It is not capital S self that revolves on the wheel, but the person who is locked into the belief that thinking is real. Until you, the person, chooses to abide as the self, capital S, deep in the wisdom of the heart, you will experience the apparent birth and death of the little S self with the person. Is this the spiritual journey you seek? The only way to abide as self is to stop the wheel of the mind and jump with acceptance and trust into the highest vibrations of wisdom residing in the heart. Because you have conditioned yourself to believe the world is real, is a real place to find truth, you think it will take effort to leave this wheel of false thinking. But you do not need to struggle with great effort to find and abide in the highest wisdom. Do not try to explain, defend, nor convince yourself with thoughts. Just abide and give self over to capital S self. The highest wisdom is always in the heart, but is obscured by the shadow of your wrong notions of the world. You are not obligated to stay on the wheel through wrong thinking, but you will need to acknowledge that the mind creates wrong notions. You will need to live with awareness. You will need to rest, accept, and trust. You will need the desire to know self, capital S. You will need to take responsibility for what you think and desire. You will need to abide in love. So I thought that was just beautiful. Good, clear intuition. So let's go to Tony, please, for today. Nobody else putting up their hands, right? Thank you. So Tony says, looks like in quote 324, she tends to put them together sometimes too. So the quote is, let me make sure that's the quote, I'll read it to you. 324, when this notion of the object is firmly rejected and removed from the subject, then consciousness alone exists without even an apparent or potential objectivity. So her contemplation, the world and everything in it appears real because of wrong thinking. Wrong thinking is believed that I am an individual person with individual thoughts. Can I exist without thought? How can I know my existence without thought? And this is what her inner wisdom says. This is why you have been asked and directed to place your attention with consciousness as much as possible. You're coming to know I exist when there are no thoughts. See the aliveness in no thought. You are here without thought and you know it. You are seeing I exist as the core of what you are. Thoughts come in, thought pass by without moving from your center. This appears difficult because of the habit of attention, always being outward focused. You are breaking the habit each and every time you pay attention to I exist. Beautiful. Let's see. I think that's it. 7:29. Thank you so much for bailing me out there, Jay. Thanks for everybody for participating. I really appreciate it. I love you guys. It's so much fun to be part of this class. Thank you. Thank you, guys. See you next week.